Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too.
I literally don't know.
I don't want to miss this.
I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
Like, I legitimately don't know what I love, and it is not acceptable to read and eat cheese all day, because those are the two things I do know that I love, but...
And you can do that a lot of days.
I mean, I read a lot as is, but yeah, I'm like, oh, most of my friends live in other states.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, I have a lot of great qualities, but being adventurous is not one of them. I kind of need extroverted people in my life to, you know, grab me by the arm and be like, let's go, you know? And Jay is my person and I love him, but he can't be the person for everything and all. And I'm just recognizing that, like, great, I checked the box. Somebody out there has my gold star. I created time and space for the first time in decades. And I legit don't know what to do with it. And I'm underwhelmed and it's uncomfortable. And like my normal go-to would be like, oh, well, pick up a new challenge or, you know, get busy or, you know, 37-step plan to finding my purpose by next week. Right. And so I'm letting myself sit in it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
Yeah.
Underwhelmed is new for me.
When you live life on 11 out of 10 all the time, coming down to an 8 out of 10 is really hard. And you're not necessarily in a place of burnout right now. And I mean, you've experienced that in the past. You know what that is. But I think one of the big things about burnout that people don't talk about very often, I mean, I feel like I talk about it constantly in various ways, but maybe not so directly, is that the people that burn out the most are the people that don't know what they love. I use the terms all the time. My listeners are going to be like, yeah, Kate, we know wants, needs, desires, and preferences, right? I use those four in that group, in that order, very intentionally all the time. But if you don't really know those things about yourself, because you've been handing over the responsibility of that to other people, well, I'll meet your wants, needs, desires, and preferences. And if you're happy, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, and the filling of the calendar. So I haven't really had the time to think about those things for me.
And filling the calendar is also about filling in other people's wants, needs, desires, and preferences.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're taught to do that as women. So folks, I just started the recording halfway through Nicole and I really like each other. So
really
like each other. So we could get into a conversation quick and we started talking and before I have not even gotten to her bio, any of that, but I thought it was important that you not miss the fact that those of us that talk about confidence and imposter syndrome and burnout and recovery, we're still figuring things out behind the scenes, folks. And you don't always hear that part. Recently, Sarah and I have shared a little bit more about it from Fried's perspective and Burn Bold's perspective. But all of us are doing this in the background. None of us have it completely figured out. And when we do figure it all out, something else comes up that is to be figured out. So it doesn't ever really stop and you never really get there. But along the way, you do need to feel like you belong, you need to feel confident, and you need to be taking the steps that bring you closer and closer and closer to yourself and your ability to meet your wants, needs, desires, preferences. So today, We have Nicole Khalil back on the podcast. Not a lot of people have been on Fried Twice, but Nicole is one of them. And Nicole's passion for eliminating gender expectations and redefining quote unquote women's work is what both keeps her up at night and what gets her up in the morning. That and an abundant amount of coffee. Nicole is an in-demand speaker, author of Validation is for Parking, respected coach, and host of the top 1% globally downloaded podcast, This is Woman's Work. Her stalker-like obsession with confidence sets her apart from the constant stream of experts telling us to be confident. She actually shares how you build it and gives actionable tools you can implement immediately. She enjoys reading, wine guzzling, is an avid cheese enthusiast, which she just referred to, a hotel snob, like amen, and a reluctant Peloton rider. Oh, welcome back to Fried.
Kate, I am so excited and happy to be here. Thanks for having me back.
So I already talked about that I love you.
Feeling is mutual.
And when I wrote to you, because one of the things that I did while we're moving forward with sort of some new branding and some upgraded ways of doing things around here, I looked through all of our past 300 plus podcast episodes and said, all right, well, what are the topics that are really poking out? What are the ones that people are going back to after years? And imposter syndrome came up a couple times. And when I wrote to you, you said, well, this is funny, everybody, because this is like totally on the nose, right? I said, Nicole, let's talk about confidence and imposter syndrome. And you're like, well, I'm not the imposter syndrome expert. And I was like,
and I'm not, to be fair, but like, it's adjacent, right? Like, yeah. It inevitably comes up all the time when you talk about confidence. So yes, I am expert adjacent. Like I would imagine you're perfectionism expert adjacent, right? Like it comes up all the time when you talk about burnout.
People pleasing, boundaries. Yes. It's all part of the same mixed bag. So Nicole did also suggest some other people, some experts in imposter syndrome for the show. But I wanted to have this conversation with Nicole first. And then, Fried Fam, if you're like, no, we need more on imposter syndrome, just let me know. We'll just do more. Because I create this and I can do what I want or what you want. So, that's how we're going to kick off. All right. First thing we need to know, what imposter syndrome is and what it is not.
Yeah. So what it is belief or feeling or fear of being exposed or found out for not being capable or not being intelligent. And here's the most important part of the definition, at least to me, despite all the evidence to the contrary, right? It's this fear of being found out for not knowing what you're doing or not doing a good job, or even though all the evidence points to you do know what you're doing and you are doing a good job, right? So it's the despite all the evidence to the contrary, to me, that is a really important distinction of imposter syndrome, because I do think it's a term that's being overused and misinterpreted and thrown around all the time when we actually mean something else. Like, it is a perfectly normal human experience to feel doubt, to have fears, to be new at something and not know what you're doing. These are normal human experiences that are not imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome is this legit, like, I'm doing it, I'm getting the evidence and the results and the whatever, and I still somehow...
I'm qualified for it. I have proof that this is... So this is really interesting, and I like that that's your favorite part, because one of the things that we talked about on a past episode of Imposter Syndrome with Nina Blackshear, who is another person that I adore to the sky and back, she said, well, if you want to stop feeling like an imposter, stop lying.
Right.
Right? And this was not really taking that part into account. This is like... Yes, you do feel like an imposter when you put out your first three podcast episodes because you're not quite a podcaster yet.
Yeah.
And Instagram wants to say, if you put out one thing in the world, that means you're a podcaster or you're an author or you're... No, you're not.
Yeah.
And it's okay to not be there yet. Like, that doesn't mean that you're an imposter. It just means that you're starting learning and growing, just like all of us have done in the beginning of everything we've ever done. You're not an imposter at the thing yet. You haven't even created the thing yet. But
yeah,
you and I are how many years? I'm 6 years into Fried. How many years into this woman's work?
Five and a half.
So we've got 11 and a half years of podcasting. That would be like one of us saying, yeah, but I'm not like a real podcaster.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we both agree that we still have a lot to learn. And sometimes the podcasting space can feel very muddy and confusing and all of that. But I would imagine neither you nor I are questioning whether or not we are a legitimate podcaster or whether or not, because there's evidence, there's results. We have something to look at that is factual.
Say that honestly, again. I'll tell you this from a very honest space is that Fried is a huge part of what we do, but because Fried doesn't directly earn its own money, I don't always think of myself as a podcaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I host a podcast.
Right.
For my business and for the world. But there could be, even within me, this idea that I do have all this evidence. I mean, gosh, we've got 300 episodes. We're close to 1 million downloads. We reach 100 countries around the world. I don't know how. I mean, if somebody said, can you help me start a podcast? I'd be like, well, yeah, duh. It's not that hard. Here we go.
Right.
And still, there is a slight hesitance for me.
Yeah. I think it's interesting how, to me, that speaks to, you know, if we think of something on a sliding scale, one being you just released your first episode of the podcast and 10 being your Mel Robbins, you know, we have all of this space in between where you and I land, right? So at what point are we allowed to call ourselves a podcaster? Is it when we're at a 4? Is it when we're at an 8? I don't know. I don't have, but it's funny that you mentioned that. I went on Google, when you searched me, it used to say author, and I submitted to have it changed to say podcaster because I wanted to claim that and own that. And This Is Woman's Work is making money, but it's not profitable, right? Like it's generating revenue, but I put all that money right back in. Plus, if you factor in time and energy, so am I a podcaster? I don't know. Depends on how you define it. But I do feel like I don't question. I have fears and doubts, but I don't question that I know what I'm doing or that I'm a fraud
Me either. Right. And so that this is the reason that I wanted to dig into this particularly is because I did feel that like moment of hesitation. And I thought, this is what trips people up. Mm-hmm. This is what trips people up. Like I'm not a professional, like podcasting is not my like first job.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what else is weird about it? I think like, you know, because I think other people will judge our numbers at a different rate. Like if we're going from 0 to 10, there are people out there that will never start a podcast that put us at an 8.5.
Right.
Right. But then when you're in it, you judge it a little bit differently. So this is, I think the core message underneath all of this is imposter syndrome is about judgment.
Yeah, and feelings despite the facts, right? Yeah. Like you're looking at the facts and we're choosing a perspective, or as your guest said earlier, we're choosing to lie to ourselves about the facts, which is problematic. When somebody told me this once and it really resonated with me is when people suffer from imposter syndrome, they internalize all of their mistakes and externalize all of their successes. Mm. So if you think about it, internalizing all of your mistakes, whenever anything goes wrong in whatever it is that you're doing, it is your fault. You weren't smart enough. You should have done this better. You should have been a better leader. You should have made this decision. You should, like, it's always some internal flaw on your part. But whenever anything goes well, whenever you succeed or get good results or achieve or whatever, it's external. It could be even like it's God's blessing, or I got lucky, or I have a great team, or I knew the right person, or because of my background or whatever. Like it's this constant. And I think that's the thing that we need to look at too. It's constant, consistent. I have moments of doubt. We just publicly talked about a moment of doubt that we have, but it's not constant or consistent. And I can look at the podcast and see some of the successes and know the part that I played in that.
Yeah.
And I can look at the mistakes and know the part I played in that too, but also things that were out of my hands or, you know, had something to do with someone else. It's this consistent externalizing of all the good things and internalizing of all the bad things that I think is a really good tell of whether or not you are actually experiencing imposter syndrome.
And whether or not you're going to burn out in your life.
Yes.
And this is where that overlap comes in, right? Because this is, again, not something we talk about a ton on Fried, but your internal speak has so much to do with whether or not you're ever going to burn out. The way that you talk to yourself about the things that happen in your life have so much to do with it. And as you say this, I'm like, whenever people talk about imposter syndrome, I'm like, I don't have imposter syndrome. Like, that's just like not my... That's Same. Not where I fall.
Yeah.
But as you talk about it now, and maybe it's not consistent and constant, but I do have those tendencies. You know, like my speaker reel was just nominated. I nominated my speaker reel for an award because that's how you get awards. You nominate yourself for the part. Like, that's how it goes. And you pay a fee to nominate yourself. That's anybody who's ever won a Grammy. One of my friends, a very good friend of mine, her son was eligible to be nominated for a Grammy. And the cost associated with it was $30,000.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, these things are not, like, the nomination process, you pay for the judging, you pay for all the things. So years ago, when I learned what a Webby was in podcasting, and I found out you had to pay for it, I was like, I'll pay for awards, you know, like, very. But then I realized that that's how all awards go. So I nominated my speaker reel for an award. And I was shortlisted.
It's a great speaker reel.
So I'm glad shortlisted, you did. But the thing that happens in my head when that happened was, oh, maybe there weren't a lot of submissions. Oh, there's eight other people. There's eight people total that were shortlisted. That's seven other people. Like, there's even amongst eight. I mean, there's no way I'm going to be the top out of the eight. There's like, oh, well, and of course, I mean, I didn't create it by myself, so I can't really own this winning because I had a production team and a branding expert, and somebody helped me write some of the script, and I had previous engagements where I was allowed to record, and like all of these things had to come together for this. My speaking reel probably had about 300 people involved in it at the end, if we include the audience that was sitting there for two of the talks that I submitted, right? Maybe actually it was more than that. It was probably about 750 people. So I start to think, well, I can't own this. I can't own this because it's not mine. I didn't do the video editing. I didn't, right? And all this noise comes up.
Yeah. So what popped into my head as you were talking is someone on my podcast, and I can't remember who, and I feel awful about that, but introduced this concept of like red light, yellow light, green light. And if we think about imposter syndrome as the red light, right? Like you've gone dark, or burnout as the red light. And green light is, compared to imposter syndrome, is confidence, or what would be the green light for burnout? Peace?
Regulated, like neutral.
Right.
Yeah.
What I think you just talked about is what I would imagine falls in the yellow light. You kind of dipped in, but you're not, I don't want to speak for you. My experience of you is you're not living in imposter syndrome. No. You're having moments or experiences that feel like that, fears, doubts, normal things that happen. I think imposter syndrome is only a red light thing where you're just there consistently and constantly. But I think it is perfectly normal human behavior to dip into yellow light all the time. It's like I've had really rough days, yellow light, that didn't result in burnout.
Yeah.
Because I was able to catch it. Or even what we were just talking about earlier is like, I've been in a couple of weeks of feeling really underwhelmed, and the clearest sign for me was resentment and being really ragey for no apparent reason. Like, and I heard your voice in my head. I'm like, this is a sign. I was in yellow light. I'm not in burnout, but I noticed the signs of just like normal living that I might be headed that direction if I don't start paying attention. And I think that's what I am trying to convey, maybe not as well, but with imposter syndrome, it's all red light behavior, but everything else that where we dip into the yellow, that's just normal. I mean, you've never submitted your speaker reel for an award before. So this is a new experience. Whenever we do something new, that's where fear and doubt really kicks in at the highest because we are not competent yet, not credible yet. And frankly, it wouldn't say very much about whatever it is that we were doing if we could be competent and credible in one day, right? Anytime we do something new, there is a period of time where you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And that's part of the deal. And it is so normal to question and have doubts and have fears and that voice in your head and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, yellow light, what do we do in those moments? What are the choices that we make? How do we begin to pay attention so we don't end up in the red light? And managing what I call your head trash or your inner critic or whatever is absolutely one of the best ways to combat imposter syndrome and to build confidence, to basically move from yellow back into green or prevent you from getting into red.
Yeah. So this is something I could hear myself like talking to a client. And I think this is the sentence that I say, this is, all right, y'all, this is thousands of dollars of coaching in under 60 seconds for free on a podcast. Oh, so you're human.
Yeah. Right. Oh, you and everyone else. Good.
Oh, you had a bad feeling and the world has convinced you that you should never feel bad ever for any reason. Yeah. But your like mother is in the hospital and your child puked on your shoes this morning and you weren't able to stay regulated. Like, no shit.
Yeah. Yes. That's my beef with imposter syndrome is it's being overused when the reality is we have normal human experiences that trigger, and I'm going to put in air quotes, bad feelings all the freaking time. And the reality is we've been somewhere taught to avoid all of these bad feelings, but that's where all the magic lives, right? Joy doesn't wake you up to something new. Pain does. Challenge does, fear does, doubt does. It's honestly, you know, the tougher experiences where we often learn the most about ourselves, where we often take the biggest action towards something new or something that matters. It's often where we learn the most. I mean, there's just so much power in that, but we have been taught that the second we feel anything uncomfortable, it's wrong. It's bad. It should be avoided. It should be fixed, solved. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It means your nervous system is dysregulated. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Your nervous system knows what to do with anxiety and doubt and fear. Like it does this all day, every day without you even noticing. You are not dysregulated because you have an emotion.
100%. And an emotion like anger is just as important to life experience as an emotion like happiness. And yet we, you know, steer everything towards happiness and everything away from anger or pain. And it's just, it's complicated. But yeah, I think with imposter syndrome, we're overusing it and we're masking normal human behavior and conditioning and calling it something else. And where I see it being the most problematic is with women, especially high achieving women, because when you think of imposter syndrome, I think most of us think of a high achieving woman. Like that's the poster child for it, right? Research shows that women and men feel imposter syndrome at pretty much the same levels. Men are less likely to disclose, but imposter syndrome is a pretty gender neutral, universal experience. And yet I think we picture a woman, and to me, that's problematic. Yeah. So I think it's problematic when we picture a woman, when we think of imposter syndrome, because again, we reinforce this message that it's a quote unquote woman's problem, right? That women are more filled with fear and doubt or what have you. And it also, I think, lets companies and cultures and leaders off the hook. It keeps the onus or the responsibility of, you know, not fitting in or feeling like you belong or taking credit or anything like that. It keeps the onus on the woman or the person experiencing imposter syndrome, and it relieves any responsibility from the leader, the company, and the culture. If a sense of belonging is the one of the antidotes to imposter syndrome, then I think we need to look at the companies and the cultures and leaders and ask ourselves, are they creating cultures of belonging? Are people being acknowledged for the work that they're doing? Are they being given credit? Like, meritocracy is such a big topic right now. And I mean, the idea that anyone gets anywhere on merit alone is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And I think the problem is if the merit isn't being acknowledged or celebrated or recognized, it's easier for people to feel like they have imposter syndrome. But it's not that they have imposter syndrome, it's that they are in a shitty environment.
Yeah.
That doesn't recognize their own merit.
Yeah. And so this is something that the whole idea of belonging and praise in the workplace, these are things that are so big in burnout, right? Like, lack of belonging, lack of community, and lack of praise are two of the top six reasons that people burn out in the workplace. And the thing that gets me about this is that I always talk about this from the both and perspective. Like, sure, if there's no praise being given, that's problematic. But if there's praise being given and you have imposter syndrome, what are the chances that you're going to be able to absorb that praise? So your work, while the company does have work and while they do have things to do, if you're unable to engage with that, with them, it's not going to help.
Yes. Well, and if you push away any compliments or any praise, people are unlikely to want to do it again.
Of course.
So I agree with you. It's a both and, because you know what a company values by what they recognize. And there are a lot of things merit-based that people do that go unrecognized all the time. And that's where I think we need to look at cultures versus imposter syndrome. But to your point, if somebody actually is experiencing imposter syndrome, if they actually struggle with that, and it's not just normal fear and doubt, it doesn't matter how much you praise them if they're not going to let it in. And then, unfortunately, that contributes to the problem, because it lets the people know who are doing the praising, this isn't really helping, it's not worth doing, I'm not getting the response I want, so why would I keep doing it? Not just to that person, but to other people as well.
Yeah, and I think, like, when we get into this conversation about, like, the company versus the individual, or the person versus the group, in associations, in friend groups, in anything, I think we've forgot about the group for a really long time. We forgot about the company for a really long time. So there's been this swing to be like, well, the company has to do it. The group has to do it. They're the perpetrators. They have to fix it. And I think that it's swung too far, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a, like, if you are coming into a new group of people, say, there's a group of people that exists, it's an association, maybe it's not a workplace, it's an association, and you're coming in to this association, and you make no effort to learn the social norms of the association. And you're like, well, I'm supposed to just belong by being myself, because Brené Brown says authenticity first. It's like, I'm not telling you to be inauthentic, but if you don't agree with the rules of the road within that space, you're not going to belong. It doesn't mean you have to agree to everything. It doesn't mean you have to, like, wash yourself of any sort of difference. We want the difference. And also, there's got to be some effort made from, I have a keynote about this, which is why I'm getting very excited right now. We have, from the belonger, the group, to the belongee, the individual, right? There's got to be some interplay between those two things, because we can't just expect And this is the same in a burnout. Like if you create a utopian workplace, there's still going to be people that burn out. And it's not because burnout is your fault. It's not because belonging is your responsibility, but it's because we are a part of everything that we are a part of. And if you're not doing your part in the thing that you're a part of, it's not going to work.
We could not possibly agree more. It's this both and concept, and it's the responsibility concept is like we are each individually responsible for all the things that are happening in our lives. That doesn't mean we're at fault or that we should be blamed for everything, but we are responsible. And speaking of terms that are overused, toxic work cultures or toxic workplace or, you know, I mean, God, the amount of people who are labeling their bosses as narcissistic, it's just gotten ridiculous. I had a conversation with a woman maybe about a year ago, and she was talking about her toxic workplace and how everybody's numbers are put out publicly all the time. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Is this a new thing? And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, everybody's number is being reported. Is this a new thing? Or did you know that that was happening when you joined the organization? I happen to know the organization. They've been reporting numbers publicly for, I mean, ever, multiple decades from what I know personally. And I'm like, you chose to join an organization that does this. They've always done it. They're probably going to continue to do it. It's a sales organization. This might be part of it. It's part of the motivation. People who are attracted to this company and this role typically like that and want that. If you have a problem with that, then you need to solve your own problem or find another organization.
Yes.
But this is not toxic work. If they publicly berated you for, like, if they lined you up and talked about what a loser you were because of that, would be different.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, this I did an episode on this like toxic workplace idea a little while ago because I was like, let's actually define it. And Sarah was mentioning that one of the people she works with said, you know, I listened to that episode and I thought I had a toxic workplace because she's like, but I realized during that episode, it's just a bad fit. Bad fit is not toxic. Those are different things. So for a quick reminder for people that maybe haven't listened to that episode yet, there are four things that make a toxic workplace according to research, and they are ostracism, bullying, harassment, and incivility.
Makes perfect sense. And if you're in an environment that has any or all of those things, and you are experiencing or feel you have imposter syndrome, it may be worth checking whether or not a different environment would alleviate be supportive. That. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So just a reminder that you're not going to belong and fit everywhere.
That Thank God.
Right? That doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make other people bad people. Some people are bad people. That's whenever somebody, you know, I'm in big in the National Speakers, and I'm not a big person. I'm big into the National Speakers Association. They've been very supportive of me, and I don't think I'd have a speaking business without them. And so this is a community I spend a lot of time with. Does that mean it's the right community for everybody? No, number one. Number two, every time somebody's like, well, I'd like to join. I've heard that the people are really generous. And I'm like, they are. And 10% of the people are assholes and trying to sell you something. Because 10% of the people everywhere, anywhere, everywhere are assholes.
100%.
Right? Because that's just life. Like, there's just going to be a certain percentage of jerks in the room, no matter what. That does not a toxic environment make.
Yeah. Interesting, though, this just popped into my head. There's a research being done that basically says that, you know, everybody is experiencing imposter syndrome at some level. This is, common than you would think. But the people who report never having feelings of imposter syndrome, like have never experienced it or at least report that, are the most likely to actually be imposters themselves. Meaning that they're the most likely to have unwarranted success or success not based in merit.
Yeah.
So it is really interesting.
The sociopaths are imposters that don't feel imposter syndrome, basically.
Exactly right. Like fun. So if you have never experienced imposter syndrome ever, you might have something to be concerned about.
I love that. All right, let's do a quick recap. Can you just do the definition of imposter syndrome again with the part that you love? Because I think we need to like settle back in.
Yeah. So the fear of being found out or exposed for not being capable, talented, or intelligent enough. And the part that I love the most, despite all the evidence to the contrary. Some things that might clue you into you having imposter syndrome is if you regularly, consistently externalize your successes or internalize your failures. You know, there are a lot of
Venn diagrams.
Overlapping circles, right? Venn diagrams. Thank you. You know, you think of burnout, perfectionism, imposter syndrome, confidence. There's so much overlapping, but I think they're all a little bit unique. And for me, imposter syndrome lands in that red. Yeah. It's just a ever-present experience. It's not the same as moments of fear and doubt or not knowing what you're doing or being new to something or not being capable or competent yet. And I think the yet part is really important. There are handfuls of ways to combat imposter syndrome, and they are very similar to how you build confidence. So you mentioned one already, which is changing the voice in your head, managing your own head trash. Separating facts and feelings can be really important for imposter syndrome. Again, the facts are evidence-based. We know what you've accomplished. We know what you've achieved. So, you know, separating fact from feeling, reframing failure in a way that works, and of course, that sense of belonging that we talked a little bit about too. And I would just add, based on our conversation, being responsible for your sense of belonging and understanding if there are places that you don't feel you belong, you have a choice. You can figure out how to belong, or you can identify it as not a good fit,
yeah,
and then go find someplace where you can belong. And I don't say that flippantly. I know it's not as easy as that. You know, people can't just leave jobs and find jobs, but to be thinking about it from that lens of I'm responsible. And there are places where I can be my best authentic self and thrive. And if I'm in a place where I'm being my best authentic self and I am not thriving, there might be some consideration that needs to happen.
Or I'm not thriving and I don't feel like I could be my best authentic self. I want to dive into the fact versus fiction solution.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit.
So
one of the things that I am constantly on my clients for, like constantly, again, folks, free life coaching happening right now. One of the things I'm constantly on people for is hyperbole and making big, grand statements that don't actually mean much of anything. Mm-hmm. So getting on the phone with me and saying, well, everything was a disaster, so then I ate all the chocolate in the world. Okay, break it. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
What does everything is a disaster mean? And then once we start breaking it down, we start, well, what part of that is fact and what part of that is emotion? And listen, folks, unfortunately, people are like, follow your emotions. And we say that a lot on the podcast because we do mean it. And also, emotions are not always correct.
Mm-hmm. They're information.
Yeah.
Not fact.
Not fact.
Right. Yeah. So I always think of the movie Inside Out. Mm. There is a very small scene where Joy and Bing Bong are on the train and boxes that are labeled facts and opinions spill over and they get all mixed. And she's like, I can't tell them apart. And Bing Bong says something like, oh, don't worry about it. Nobody can. And they just dump them all back in. And that's kind of the human experience, right? We interpret our feelings or our perspectives as truth, as opposed to, you know, truth with the capital T is fact. So I have a 4-step process that I use all the time and use in my coaching as well. And it goes like this. So using your example of like, everything was a disaster, right? Okay, great. First step is asking yourself, what are the facts? The facts are, we had a meeting at, oh, let's do that. The facts are we had a podcast recording at 10 o'clock. The facts are at 10:20 something, my internet went out. The facts are that it took me 7 minutes to get back in. The facts are you were here, whatever. These are the facts. And then the second question you ask is, what am I making up about the facts? Mm-hmm. And this is that opportunity to separate the two, because we interact with what we make up, and it's really hard to do. It's much harder than you would think. Because I, even in that, almost said a few things that I made up about the facts. Example, you were very gracious about it. I made that up. You might have been pissed. I don't know. But I made up that you were very gracious about the fact that my internet went out. I, made up that you might think I'm a rookie and my internet, like I don't have good internet or something like that. Or you might, we make up all sorts of shit, but separating the, here are the facts. Here's what I'm making up about the facts. Then the third question you ask yourself is, what is a different, more productive, more empowered way to see it? Same set of facts. I interpreted one thing naturally. We typically go negative naturally. What is a different, more productive, more empowered way to see it? Example, shit happens. We know that. No big deal. Another empowered or productive, maybe it contributed to our conversation in some way. I get to use it as an example in this. Okay, great. So going through, and sometimes when you're new at this, having somebody else help you come up with different interpretations can be helpful, because I do think it's hard to read the label from inside the bottle, right? Like when you're in it, when you're experiencing it, it's hard to see things clearly. And sometimes an outside objective opinion can be helpful. But over time, you want to be able to create your own different, more productive, more empowered interpretation of the same set of facts on your own. And then the fourth question is, how do I get into action from here? Because action builds confidence. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And so, how I got into action from here was got back into it. Yeah. Not letting yourself sit and fester in the feelings, which we typically, that's where we're at, is we go to number two and we stay in number two.
Yeah.
What am I making up about the facts?
Yeah. So this reminds me of two different things. One, Brené Brown was saying that with her husband, the prompt that she uses to start letting him know that she's upset about something, but it might not be real, is the story that I'm telling myself is.
Exactly. Right? Yep.
So this is a similar thing. So that's one thing that I think of. The next thing that I think of, and gosh, I refer to this episode a lot. I feel like Heather and I might need to have another conversation, but I did an episode with a woman named Heather Hansen a couple of years ago, and she was a trial attorney. And she talks about the fact that your brain has all, both sides of your brain have all the same facts. The same facts are in there. And there's an attorney on one side and an attorney on the other side. And they're both speaking to the same jury. And that jury is you. And they're using the same set of facts. And one of them is telling you a shitty story. And one of them is telling you a good story. But it's the same facts.
Yeah. And I mean, we are all doing this all the time.
Constantly. So then that third question is like, well, what could an opposing attorney say in this scenario? Like if that's right, like what would what's something else that somebody else could fight for based on these facts? Because I think what happens sometimes in that third step is that people make things up that feel unreal and then they can't grasp them because they feel too far away from what they think is real. So what could you say there that you could fight for because you have the facts to back it up?
Yeah, I think that is so important. It has to feel just as true.
Yeah.
Right? This is so important. This is not about toxic positivity. This is not about cheerleading. This is not about putting lipstick on a pig or whatever the expressions are, right? This is about finding a different interpretation that feels like it could be just as true.
Yeah. And for the therapists and mental health professionals, yes, we understand that this is cognitive reappraisal. And yes, we know, folks, listen, this is not just something we do for the fun of it. This will change over time the way that your brain works, because you'll jump to part three faster and faster and faster as time goes on, because you're giving your brain a new pathway to manage situations. And it is well shown that people that jump into this step faster and are able to get to this place faster have lower levels of stress and better mental health outcomes.
Yeah. I mean, you practice your way into it, yeah. Right? And it just gets faster and easier with time. What I will say, though, is my step two still gets triggered on a regular basis, but it's with bigger things. Like, yeah. You know, it's interesting. The small stuff that used to trip me up, I can go to step three real fast on those and it doesn't impact me. It's now it's like with, you know, bigger things that pop up that I'm having to go through that. But I still use this process for myself on a regular basis.
Yeah, because it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
Fried fam. Recap. It is not imposter syndrome. If you're in something new, if you're trying something out, if you're having fear and doubts because you're learning and growing, if you have a day where you're like, oh shit, can I do this? That's not imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome is the words you use, Nicole, were constant and consistent. This is a non-stop berating of yourself internally for everything that goes wrong in your world and an inability to accept that you have any influence over the good. That's number one. Number two, we combat imposter syndrome with a few different things: belonging, confidence, reframing, and?
Reframing failure, managing head trash. Yeah.
And there are four steps to do the reframing, which once you do, happen easier and faster, and expand your capacity, expand your bandwidth for the things that you can manage, thus lowering your stress load over time. See why I invited Nicole? Simple, straightforward, was kept it to the point the whole time. You know, every time I started to go down a road to the left, Nicole was like, but imposter syndrome.
Well, it was on the brain. And as you were talking, little light bulb moments came up. That's actually why I was so excited to come and talk about imposter syndrome. It's, you know, not what I talk about all day, every day, but I knew you and I would brainstorm together and like new ideas would form and I love talking with you. I feel like things become clearer, better, faster. Can you just live with me and make me smarter all the time?
I once had a patient ask me if she could keep me in her pocket.
Yeah. Yep.
I was like, shrink me down. And now literally people do keep me in their pocket now, which is people keep you in their pockets too. So why don't you tell everybody where they find your podcast, what you're up to and all those good things.
Yeah. So this is Woman's Work is the podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. I will say too, it's confidence derailer quiz. So if we think about all the things that chip away at our confidence, which is the antidote, confidence is the antidote to imposter syndrome. We have a quiz. So you can like fine tune what your biggest confidence derailer is, what's impacting you the most, what might be contributing to your imposter syndrome the most. So if you go to NicoleKhalil.com/confidence quiz, you can find that there and you can kind of figure out where do you start? What should you focus on first that might be chipping away at or doing the most damage to your own confidence?
I love it. Fried fam, I think this is going to be one of those that we share a lot. So if there's somebody that kept popping up in your head while you were listening to this episode, go right now, hit the share button in whatever platform you're in, send it over to them immediately, because there is no time like the present to improve your life. Nicole, thank you so much for coming and hanging with me today.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Fried fam, until next time.